From historic Seminary Ridge in Gettysburg, Pennsylvania, this is The Seminary Explores. Conversations about people, politics, theology, and life with your host, Dr. Gerald Christensen.
The role of the church in the liberal arts university. Hello, I'm Jerry Christensen, and this is The Seminary Explores. Our guest today is the Dr. Baird Tipson, former president of two distinguished universities in his career. First, the president of Wittenberg University in Springfield, Ohio, from 1995 to 2004, and then of Washington College in Chestertown, Maryland, from 2004 to 2010. Pleasure to have you with us. What do you were a president of a liberal arts, two liberal arts colleges. What do you think was its role in society? Let's just leave it there for that, you know, Baird, and then go on to the comparison to the tech colleges.
Well, let me start, Jerry. First of all, thank you for inviting me to be on the program. I think that when we look at higher education, we have to look at its goals in a much broader way than we have tended to do in recent years. The purpose of college education is not simply to prepare somebody for a job. Not that that's unimportant, and obviously for parents who are spending a lot of tuition dollars, it can be the most important. But this is probably for most people the final 4 years of their full-time education. And it's preparing them for a lot of things, preparing them for citizenship, preparing them, should they choose to marry and have children, for constructive family life, preparing them to not only be effective in the job that they get right after college, but in the average 6 or 7 jobs that they'll have in the future beyond that, which may turn out to be very different from the first job that they take. So those of us in liberal arts education, anyway, are very uncomfortable with the idea that our primary mission is to prepare you for that first job. And I think we do a pretty good job in those other respects as well.
The idea of a technical college, which neither of us want to put down, they're very important to us, technical high schools. We're really talking about the role of a liberal arts college, so we need to say it's not new.
Well, I think higher education as we know it now is the descendant of earlier forms of education, which were both types, frankly. There were institutions that were preparing people for specific professions, medical schools, law schools, in the Roman Catholic Church, schools of canon law that prepared people to be canon lawyers.
Yes.
But in front of those, earlier chronologically in a person's life, was a broad general education, which included literature, which included philosophy, which included something they wouldn't have called history, but was not too different from what we call history.
Right, right.
And I think that's what is in danger of being slighted when we focus too much attention on the technical side of things.
The four liberal arts from way back in Plato's time that included what we would say today as the sciences, though it was a theory of the sciences, including geometry, mathematics, astronomy, all having to do with mathematical relationships and mathematical theory.
Well, classically, they thought of three, I'll call them sort of basic liberal arts, and then four adjunct liberal arts, which were all mathematical, including music, which was imagined to be a mathematical discipline. But astronomy, as you mentioned, geography. But the three, the trivium, the primary ones, were logic, grammar, and rhetoric.
Yeah.
Rhetoric being basically how you write persuasively, how you speak persuasively.
Mm-hmm.
And in some respects, that was the most important of the three, not that grammar and logic were unimportant.
And it all had to do also with forming the person as a thinking, a common sense person, a person who knows how to analyze, to sort things out, to think, and then to apply that to everyday life. And that can't be a bad goal, can it? I mean, it's not elitist or...
Well, I think very often people, after they've had their first couple of jobs and have been in the profession for a while, find themselves in a situation where they're supervising other people. And very often the people they're supervising will know more about a specific topic than they will. And I always used to say that a liberal arts education prepares you to know what you know what you don't know, and prepares you to know where to go to find out more about what you don't know and to get good advice about what you don't know. And so I think it's not an accident that many of the people who have risen to the top of their professions were educated liberally.
Mm-hmm. And by liberal there, we do not necessarily mean a political liberalism. It's the root of what? Free.
That's right. I mean, it
or human.
Yeah, it liberates you from preconceived notions.
Yeah.
And so ideally, conservatives should be just as committed to liberal arts education as so-called political liberals. And in fact, most of them are.
They are. Yeah. This one place where all that crosses the lines. If liberal arts education is still important to us, vital to us, what about the church? Now, in the case of Wittenberg University, it was founded by Lutherans, and in Washington College, it was founded by Episcopalians?
Washington College thinks of itself as the first secular college in the United States. It's the 10th,
secular?
It's the 10th oldest. It was founded during that period when Enlightenment ideas prevailed. It was not formally affiliated with a church, but it was founded by an Episcopal priest, and its first several presidents were Episcopal priests, so I would argue that it had a tie to the church, but not as formal a tie.
Well, you might compare it, if I may, with Gettysburg College, which was founded by Samuel Simon Schumacher, a Lutheran minister who already founded the seminary, but I don't believe he ever thought of it as something more than open to the entire society. I don't think he meant that you had to be a church member in order to come here.
And among the Lutheran colleges, there's a certain set of them, mostly in the East, who were founded that way.
Right.
The tie of the church was important, but it wasn't determinative.
Right.
And then there's another set, which tends to be in the middle of the country, mm-hmm. which are much more strongly related to the church. St. Olaf would be a good example. Gustavus Adolphus would be a good example. Yes. I think Luther College in Decorah. And they sometimes look at the Eastern Lutheran colleges and feel like they're not really Lutheran.
Yes, right.
And by their standards, they're not. But I think the church relationship has been extremely important and valuable in the Eastern colleges as well.
What then do you think is the role of the church in college education today? Does it all my interviews these days with the society apparently changing in ways that affect this kind of a public affairs program? Nearly all the time, I'm asking the question: What's the role of whatever you're doing in this changing culture of ours? Now, what's the role of a church-related college? Do you think in the the 21st century?
Yeah, that's two questions. I mean, first, what's the role of the church in the church-related college, and then what's the role of the church-related college in the larger
and
society?
A third one: what's the role of the church in the
guild. Yeah, well, that one
that's
too.
That's another
discussion. I'm not very well qualified to say about that one. But the first one, I mean, what's the role of the church in the church-related liberal arts college? It's not to determine what can and cannot be taught, at least not in a Lutheran context. Luther felt very strongly that the search for truth should not be constrained by censorship of any kind. And the truth could only lead to God because God was truth. And so in Lutheran higher education, there's always been a tremendous openness. So, for example, in some denominational colleges, the question of can one be a Darwinist and teach biology in a church-related college, that's a silly question at a Lutheran mm-hmm. college. Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously, one tries to explain natural phenomena in the most powerful, persuasive way, and that is Darwinism mm-hmm. right now, mm-hmm. Which is not to say that one would never be exposed to any other way of looking at the cosmos, mm-hmm. but it would probably not be in a biology class. Mm-hmm. It would be in a philosophy class or a religion class.
In some ways, the churches have had to find, well, not some ways, in many ways, they've had to find new ways of relating to colleges. For example, at Wittenberg, the percentage of Lutherans at this Lutheran-founded college was probably not very high. Was the emphasis there, as it is in some other church-related colleges, in the chapel or in the chaplaincy or in some kind of religious program, not necessarily requiring tons of courses as they did when I was in college in religion?
Yeah, I think the movement, at least at the older colleges, has been away from saying one must take Old New Testament, one must take theology, and grounding the church relationship in what we would call extracurricular activities. They all have strong religion departments, but even within those departments, you're as likely to find the subject matter being the religion of China and Japan, mm-hmm. let's say, as systematic theology.
Mm-hmm.
But these colleges all have robust chapel programs, and those students who want to make Lutheranism a very important part of their life at that point will find that the chapel is probably the place that they are drawn. We need to recognize that between the ages of 18 and 21 and 22, especially for men, these are the times in a person's life where they're least likely to be attracted by the institutional church. And many people who are devout church members in later years were not particularly related during the time they were in college. And we have to just be honest about that and realistic about that.
Barbara Frankel pointed out in one of the previous interviews on this show, Baird, that it's something I hadn't heard of before, though it's clear enough, and that is that the word religion is not very popular nowadays, but the word religious is.
And so spiritual is even more popular.
Even more, yes, and all the cognates of religious. So it's the denominational thing that seems to be turning people off to some degree. Some people are being turned off by it. But the search for meaning is still as prominent as ever and probably will always be. So
you know, I maybe take a somewhat different point of view, not than Barbara, but I think words like spiritual and religion used in that fairly loose sense are deceptive. I mean, I think in a lot of ways what you're really talking about is a very shallow religiosity that almost deserves to be overturned. I think in college, part of our responsibility is to break apart the kind of simple truths that people come to college with from high school. And that's not simply religious truths, that's political truths, that's all kinds of truth. And this is one of the reasons when the freshman young woman or young man comes home for Thanksgiving that first year, the parents are often appalled. Well, I thought that was a church-related college, and you learned that? But in fact, I think what we're performing a very important function, which is to open up people. And it in my judgment, it does college students no favors to think that they can go through life with a relatively simple-minded faith. I think their faith needs to be challenged and it needs to be deepened and broadened, and the college years are the ideal time for that to occur.
Yes. And so we need to distinguish between a religious search and a superficial religiosity that does not have a great deal of profundity to it. Can we do the same for the current emphasis on the sciences or the tech courses? Not bad. Computer courses, tech courses, business courses, as compared to the humanities?
Yeah, well, let's focus on science at first. And
strictly speaking, science.
So the classic science, biology, physics, chemistry, parts of psychology, parts of anthropology. I think there are two different ways of teaching those sciences. And very often, at least at the introductory levels, there's a tendency to make them memorizing large amounts of facts. And I think that's absolutely the wrong way to teach science, at least at a liberal arts college. We ought to be teaching principles. We ought to be teaching scientific method. The way a physicist would approach a problem or the way a biologist would approach a problem, rather than memorizing endlessly the bones in the body and the parts of the cell. And not that that's not important. I mean, doctors need to know all that stuff. But they also need to know, okay, what is disease? How does disease happen? You know, how does it fit within the larger life of one of my patients? And I think liberal arts colleges are very good at that. And that kind of science teaching is absolutely consistent with the teaching of literature or history or political science or economics or all the other things that we do. Where we worry is where it gets very instrumental. You're going to learn these three programming languages, and that will give you a degree in computer science that you can then go out. Computer science is a wonderful example of a discipline that can be taught in that very broad way that I was talking about. So you sort of understand the theory of a computer and the various ways in which languages are developed, but it can also be extremely instrumental. I need to know how to use this particular program to do these particular functions. And if that's all it is, I think that's a very dangerous kind of education. So, but you know, broadening to business, to what we'd call the professions, nursing, social work, which are often taught in college as well. I think there again, I mean, you need to know a lot of practical information. Obviously, if you're going to be a social worker, you need to know how to do social work. But you also need to know what the sociological basis is for what you're doing, the psychological basis. And again, I think liberal arts colleges do that very well. And just to give you an example, I mean, in several different colleges, I would talk to high school principals, and they would say, we really like to hire graduates of liberal arts colleges as our teachers because they have a much broader education than the people who come out of some of the big state-supported teachers' colleges. Mm-hmm.
How does this view affect, then, your view of the humanities one more time? Let's take it from the other standpoint. What's so good about the humanities?
Well, I think the humanities teach you to question yourself. They broaden your sense of what is true and what is not true. I was just talking to a student the other day who had just spent a year in France, and he confirmed my prejudice, which is when you go and spend a lot of time in another country, you actually learn much more about your own country than you do about the other country.
Yeah.
And I think that's because you're suddenly questioning things that you had always taken for granted. You know, a meal begins with salad, and then you have the main course, and then you have dessert. And over there, you know, they might start with cheese, or they might start, pasta, and then have fish. And, you know, something as simple as that causes you to sort of think, wait a minute, you know, why do I assume that the way I do things is the only possible way? And if I may be allowed sort of a political comment, I mean, one of my discomforts with our former president, George W. Bush, is that although he spoke Spanish, at least purportedly did, I never actually heard him do it, he never evinced any sense that he knew what it was like to be other than an American. I mean, what's it like to be a Frenchman? What's it like to be a Swede? What's it like to be Chinese? Mm-hmm. I never had a sense from him that he thought that way. And I thought, you know, isn't that sad that he went to one of the very best institutions in the country and didn't come out with that? He played a lot of baseball, I think.
Well, the current president, who does have a great deal of international experience, also is the one who wants to have an increase in higher education, but his emphasis is often on business technical side.
And his Secretary of Education, Ari Duncan, I think kind of comes out of the trenches and was very interested in improving test scores. And you know, I cannot quarrel with that. I mean, we need to find a way to force school systems and to force classroom teachers to spend more time on the kids at the lower end. Mm-hmm. You know, the kids who probably need the help more, the smartest kids, the most fortunate kids who've had, you know, wonderful experiences because their parents can afford them, are probably going to do all right. It's the ones at the bottom. And I think, you know, testing and all the other things that we're doing are very important to kind of hold school districts' feet to the fire, but it's gotten way out of control, in my judgment. And we're the president of St. Mary's, who's about to retire to Gettysburg, has a wonderful saying. He says, "You can't make the pig fatter by weighing it."
Yeah,
and you know, I think that's sort of the downside of testing, that teachers spend all their time preparing for the test, not enough time teaching students, and so, you know, the assumption that somehow the way our kids are going to get jobs is they're going to be trained in science, technology, engineering, and mathematics. It's wonderful if they have a gift for that. It's wonderful to give them the best possible training, but there's a lot more to life than science, technology, engineering, and mathematics. And some of the things that we get involved with, technology is a beautiful example. Technology can do wonderful things for us, but it also, as we're finding out with the National Security, the NSA's testing, surveillance program is that, you know, they're making a use of technology that most people find very disturbing.
In the last minute, I always save the hardest question for the last minute, so that you have given some embarrassing answer. But you do see that there is a future still, not only for the liberal arts college, but for the church.
Yeah, my fault. We got away from that. I think it's very important for the church to continue to support its colleges. I think that education that's grounded in nothing has a tendency to go off in unfortunate directions. And when I moved from Wittenberg to Washington College, I think the thing that I noticed right away was that Washington College was not explicitly grounded in any kind of religious tradition. And so I could not speak to parents, to faculty, to students in ways that I could at Wittenberg. And I think the fact that the search for truth stems from a conviction that ultimately the truth is what's going to set us free is tremendously important. And we've really gotten away from that kind of grounding, I think, almost throughout our educational system, certainly at the large public universities. And church-related college can kind of bring us back to, okay, why are we doing this? What's the purpose of this? And in particular, you know, is the purpose of this for me to become as satisfied as I possibly can be, or is the purpose for me to become a contributing member of society? And I think the church-related colleges focus very strongly on the vocation of the individual. We are called to serve your neighbor and not to have the biggest possible house or the biggest possible boat or whatever.
And the church college, if I can summarize for this, allows us from the very beginning to raise the ultimate question. Assuming that, as you and I do, that the ultimate question is the question of God and my meaning within a universe in which God is the sovereign and the redeemer.
Yeah, although one of the things that happens is, you know, your notion of God, the notion of God you have as a 16-year-old is thrown into question. You know, do I really understand what I'm talking about? Yeah. This, and that's, you know, I think that's a healthy development for anybody.
And living as a 16-year-old for the rest of your life has some wonderful advantages, but it's not all of life. There's more to it than that. Our guest today is the former president of Wittenberg University and of Washington College in Maryland, and he is Dr. Baird Tipson. I'm Jerry Christensen for the Seminary Explorers. Have a very good day.
You've been listening to The Seminary Explores from historic Seminary Ridge in Gettysburg, Pennsylvania, a production of the Lutheran Theological Seminary at Gettysburg. We invite you to visit our website at www.ltsg.edu. All opinions expressed on this program are those of the individual speakers and are not necessarily those of Gettysburg Seminary or the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America.